Let's turn now to Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howe. So, Daniel, the clock is ticking steadily toward that contract deadline of 11:59 p.m. Saturday. How likely is it there'll be a strike?
You know, I keep thinking that there will be one. I think that there's some pent-up anger and a kind of an itch for a fight among the membership. But at the same time, you've got membership that are very concerned about their own leadership. So, you know, but I don't think we'll get a real sense of this probably until sometime on Sunday, maybe. My expectation, I think the expectation at General Motors is that we get close to the deadline on Saturday night, that they extend all contracts for all three automakers, and then they have a meeting on Sunday in the early afternoon of the leadership of the union to basically decide what they're going to do, or to be told by the leadership what they're going to do. And then perhaps, you know, they might extend a little bit more, and then kind of sends the message that we've done everything we could do, and now we're going to go on strike. I don't think it's for certain yet. And if it is, I think that a lot of people would say that's not bargaining in good faith if they're just spoiling for a fight. But if they're really bargaining and they're very involved, and my guess is, and I think the expectation now, I underscore that word expectation, is that we won't get a lot of clarity till Sunday or Monday, but we'll see.
Okay. So, as you write in your piece this week, timing and circumstances don't help. We know auto sales have been strong. There have been a string of profitable years. Just boil down for us the three big union demands.
Well, I think they want a base wage increase. They always are looking for profit sharing to be enriched to the extent possible. But I think the most important thing is the health care coverage is probably some of the best available in the private sector anywhere in the country. And the irony is here that this union historically has supported Democrats as an institution, and you have Democrats talking about Medicare for all, and I've had interviews with UAW members who scream and yell about, I'm a Democrat, and the Democrats don't understand working folks. The most important thing to me, this one person said, is my health care from General Motors. That is the most important thing.
So that is, as you say, the Holy Trinity. So we heard a GM worker in Tracy Sambleton's piece, and I'm sure that feeling is echoed. Workers feel, hey, we bit the bullet to help these companies through bankruptcy. You know, they've had stagnant base pay. So as you write, the union has a point.
They do. I think everybody's got a point here. On the one hand, you know, the union did go through a difficult time. They're now going through another difficult time because General Motors is moving to close four plants in the U.S. and one in Canada. Two of them are already shuttered, one of them in Warren, the other in Lordstown in Northeast Ohio. So they're seeing this happen even as they're getting record profit-sharing payouts the last 3 years. Since 2010, the average UAW member has received more than $80,000 in profit-sharing payments. Over that whole period of time. And in the last 3 years, have been some of the largest they've ever seen. So they look at this and they say, the company's doing really well. Why are they closing plants? Which I think now gets to the real nub of what the company is facing, and that at General Motors, they got too much plant capacity. And you could argue they didn't close enough plants in bankruptcy. And so now they're looking at a more uncertain future with trade, potential global slowdown in sales in the United States, a lot of next generation technology calls they have to make that are very expensive, and they can't continue to expand the gap between themselves and the foreign automakers operating in the United States. Their structural costs are getting out of whack.
Yeah, you actually, your column earlier this week in the news, tell us about that. For example, for General Motors, when you talk about the cost gap with non-union foreign automakers, what's GM's?
It's about $13 an hour. I think Ford, if I remember my numbers right, was about 11. And I think FCA was 5. So you look at this, and I think a lot of auto executives today would say privately, they're not going to talk about this very much publicly, but they would say that is unsustainable. A General Motors cannot be $13 an hour less competitive than Toyota or Honda or BMW or Mercedes operating in the United States. Yes, those are non-union plants, that is true. They also use a lot more temp workers than the union shops do, although the union shops do use temp workers, and that's a bone of contention because, of course, the union wants those people to be members of the union and be full-time employees because that benefits them as the union.
Yeah.
So you got a lot of different pressures going on here, and I think that's what's so interesting here is you have a real clash, and I think they both have as I said in the piece, legitimate claims here, and how they resolve it, they're going to have to resolve it. They can't, like, not resolve it. They're going to have to either have a protracted strike, which I don't expect would actually happen, or a small strike to kind of make the point and then come to an agreement.
In the meantime, as you alluded to when you were talking about all of this bargaining, here you've got that widening federal corruption probe. So you have workers who are watching the feds dig into their union leadership and catch some pretty big fish in that net.
Well, that's exactly right. And this is not over. And we at the Detroit News are very involved in reporting the story and been very aggressive on it and will continue to be. This is a very major development. And it's a real overhang here, because let's play this out just for a quick second. If they go out on strike, what's the one thing you got to do? You got to get the workforce back to work. You got to get them to ratify a deal. So if you've got leadership that people are looking at and saying, geez, these guys are being investigated by the feds, there have been indictments, there have been convictions, there are people in prison, and there could be more, probably will be more. How do we know these guys are telling us the truth? How do we know they're not cutting a deal with management? How do we know all that kind of stuff? So that's one of the things that happens when you send people out on strike is, how do you get them back? And the way you get them back is you say, this is a great deal. Here's why it's a great deal. But then if they sit back and say, I don't know if I believe you. And that is a real, and that puts also pressure on GM in this case as well, because whatever deal they put together, it's got to be something that they believe is persuasive enough to get the membership, at least 50.1% of them, to vote in favor of it.
Final few moments, Daniel. What's at stake here if you're not one of the 150,000 workers affected by the talks, mm-hmm. You know, union members, or a supplier whose business would be hurt by a strike? Why should you care about what happens?
Because it affects the economy. These companies are smaller. They have a lot less employees. Between the three of them, roughly 150,000 hourly workers across the United States, which is a heck of a lot less than it used to be. But they still are very instrumental in the economy and how people feel about the economy, particularly in places like Michigan. So if all of a sudden you go into a protracted fight, it gets ugly, all these kinds of things, and it also has implications politically as we go into 2020, that's all of that, I think, is pretty much a negative. So it's very easy to say, yesterday's news, nobody cares. These companies are a shadow of what they used to be. They still are some of the largest employers in the state of Michigan and in the Midwest.
Detroit News business columnist Daniel House. Thanks, Daniel.
You bet.